This evening, dear brethren and sisters, our subject is a character study, Daniel, a man greatly beloved. And shortly, Brother John Hitchies will speak to us about that subject. He's asked that we read by introduction the first chapter of the prophecy of Daniel, and Brother Graham Lake will read that chapter to us. So it's now with pleasure that we ask Brother John Hitchies to speak to us on this subject of Daniel, a man greatly beloved.
Well, dear brethren and sisters, to me there's always been something special about both Daniel the man and the book that bears his name. It's difficult, I find, to pin down just what it is that makes it special, but I think it's something to do with the way that we observe the life of Daniel within the book, from his childhood onwards. And the way that that account is drawn in that first chapter that we've read together surely draws us into the story concerning him and the other young men that were taken from their families and brought up in a foreign land. And it goes from there to become a story of bravery, of devotion to God, of hardship and severe testing, and finally one of great hope. And so it could be said that although this book is clearly a work of truth, it contains much that could also be found in some of the greatest stories of fiction literature. I think it's because of that nature of the book that as I read from it, I find myself alongside Daniel. I find myself sharing the experiences with him that he underwent. And it's surely quite remarkable how the scriptures do draw us into this particular story. Daniel, of course, was clearly a very special man. And yet perhaps we can still find an affinity with him. He's not so special that he could not be just like you and me in many respects. And the book shows us his humanity as well as his special nature and character and the special deeds that he does for God. And that, of course, is an important lesson for us because we can all play our parts in the accomplishment of God's purpose. We can play our part just as Daniel played his part in many aspects of the outworking of God's purpose during his time. And so we must always be open to the guidance that God gives us in our lives. We must be ready to let him show us the paths that he wants us to follow. And we must be ready to follow those paths. Well, let's turn to Daniel. And we know comparatively little about him, other than what we've read together within that first chapter. And most of what we do know of his background is contained in the first four verses that are on the screen. And within those verses, there are a number of points that we need to note. Well, that mention in verse 1 of the third year of Jehoiakim helps to give us an approximate date for when these events started to take place. The third year of Jehoiakim was on or around 605 BC. The date of Nebuchadnezzar's attack upon Jerusalem. Well, Jehoiakim, as you may recall, was the son of Josiah. And originally, he'd been named as Eliakim. Josiah, a faithful king, had attempted to assist the king of Assyria from attack by Egypt. But he'd failed in that task, and he'd been killed by Pharaoh Necho. and he'd been replaced by Jehoahaz. But again, Pharaoh intervened and imprisoned him and made Eliakim king of Judah instead. And Pharaoh then changed the name of Eliakim to the Jehoiakim that we have in the first verse of Daniel. Just looking at the two names, Eliakim and Jehoiakim, there is a strong similarity. Eliakim, who God, in this case El, will raise up, and Jehoiakim, Jehovah raises up. And if you look at the two Hebrew renderings there, you can see that they are, in fact, very similar. The difference comes in the way that God is referred to, El in Eliakim and Jehovah in Jehoiakim. And one wonders why that change was made by the king. Well, as we said, Josiah had been a faithful king. He's described by Jeremiah as having done justice and righteousness. But in stark contrast, Jehoiakim was very evil. And he indeed is heavily condemned by the words of Jeremiah. Therefore, thus says the Lord concerning Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, thou shalt not lament for him, saying, alas, my brother, or alas, my sister. Now, Jehoiakim did just the reverse of his father Josiah. He'd filled the land with vice and violence, and he'd opposed holiness. He'd cut up and cast into the fire the scroll of the scripture that Jeremiah had asked Barak to prepare. And Urijah, who is described for us as a man who prophesied in the name of the Lord, had fled to Egypt to avoid him. But Jehoiakim had sent men to Egypt to bring him back and then executed him and cast him into a common grave. Such was the nature of King Jehoiakim. And, dear brothers and sisters, that was the evil background against which the life of Daniel would have started, the background against which he and his friends would have grown up. And the result of Jehoiakim's evil was that God gave him into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar. And then he remained under the domination of Babylon until he died. Let's go back to those opening words of Daniel 1. So verse 3 implies that Daniel and the friends, the young men who were taken with him, may have had a very close relationship with King Jehoiakim. It speaks of some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants. And so perhaps Daniel himself was a descendant of the king's. Well, whatever their situation, they certainly would have seen some of the evil that Jehoiakim committed. Certainly the impression given by verse 3 is that the young men were from the higher echelons of the society of Judah of the time. And that's strengthened by verse 4, where the description is given of exemplary characters. Let's just read that verse. Young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. Yes, these were the high flyers, as we might call them today, of Judah. And note that the description is not just of their abilities, but also of their characters and of their appearances. They were good all-round individuals who were to play a key part in the household of Nebuchadnezzar. But importantly, the verse tells us that they still had the ability to learn more. They were to be taught what is called the language and literature of the Chaldeans. In other words, they were to learn about Babylonian culture and about its language and history, the culture of the nation into which they had been taken. And so they would become Jews who also knew much about the background of Babylon. Well, today we know that Babylon was a highly developed society with extensive scientific knowledge and considerable ability. And these young men were to receive a first-class education in one of the most advanced cultures of their time. No doubt the equivalent at least of a university degree today. And then verse 5 gives us more detail about the king's provision for these young men. They were appointed a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. We may wonder why Nebuchadnezzar did this. Of course, kings didn't just do such things on a whim. Nebuchadnezzar was clearly looking towards the future. And in particular, probably, he was considering the need for some form of management over those Jews that he'd taken into captivity. The Jews had come under his control, and he, in effect, needed civil servants who would understand the nature and ways of the Jewish society, but who could also ensure that they lived effectively and properly within the Babylonian culture. By training these young men, he was hoping to achieve that dual role, that they were partly Jews, but partly Babylonians or Chaldeans. And so we learn that Daniel was one of the four young men who are named for us. It seems there were probably others as well, but we're not told of their names. And it seems most likely that these young men were in their mid-teens at the time that they were taken. As we say, we don't know exactly how many there were, but clearly the others were of no significance in God's particular purpose. And Daniel was given that new name of Belteshazzar. His original name, God is my judge. But there are various interpretations of the meaning of Belteshazzar. Three that I came across: Lord of the Straitened Treasure, perhaps rather more Victorian interpretation, or Bel is the keeper of secrets, or one who lays up treasure in secret. But you can see that there is a similarity between those various meanings. Both of those last two have to do with secrets, and of course there's the mention of treasure in the first and the last of them. So we can't be exactly sure what this name was meant to convey, but clearly Nebuchadnezzar saw purpose in giving it to them, along with the Babylonian names that he gave to the other young men. But of course for Daniel, both of those names, however we interpret Belteshazzar, do have an appropriate ring about them. God was indeed his judge, just as he is for us. And Daniel was also the holder, the keeper of secrets, in that he was able to tell the king the meaning of his dreams and to reveal the hidden things of God to him. We read this in Isaiah: Thou hast heard, see all this, and will ye not declare it? I have showed thee new things from this time, even hidden things, and thou didst not know them. Yes, Isaiah, in acting as a prophet, was able to show hidden things. And in the same way, Daniel was able to do so in a similar role. Well, we saw that Daniel and the other young men had grown up during that wicked reign of Jehoiakim and would have seen the evil that he did in Judah. But clearly, Daniel himself had not been tainted by that evil, despite possibly being a member of the king's family. And so we read in the next few verses of chapter 1 that Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Yes, had Daniel followed the ways of King Jehoiakim, then he would have had few qualms about taking the food and the drink that the king provided for him. But Daniel's mind was on the things of God. And so we have this example of his conscientious objection at work at this time. Daniel could not, in good conscience, take food that was unacceptable to him. And so, despite his comparatively young age, he makes a stand against the king. It's clear from verse 9 that the chief eunuch was quite happy to go along with Daniel's request, except that he feared for his own well-being. Verse 9, now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs, and the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink, for why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king. Yes, going against the king's command and not letting or requiring Daniel to take of the food and drink he was given could well lose the chief eunuch his job or perhaps even his life. But for Daniel, this reticence, this concern on the part of the chief eunuch was of no consequence. Daniel had faith that God would be with him, particularly if he did the right thing in God's eyes. And so he proposes that they conduct a trial. He asks, verse 12, please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you, and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies, and as you see fit, so deal with your servants. Well, brothers and sisters, we mustn't underestimate the strength of the lesson that is being taught to you and me in these words. Here was a young man, a foreigner, an exile in a strange land, who was asking a senior officer of the king's household to go against the instructions that the king himself had given. Of course, it showed courage on the part of Daniel, as well as his strong faith. It was no mean feat for him to request what he did. Had the experiment failed, then the future of both Daniel and the chief eunuch was very much at risk. But Daniel had no doubt. He knew that God would be with him. And surely this example of the strength of Daniel's character reminds us that our consciences can also be put to the test. We tend to think of conscientious objection in relation to jury service or to military service. But there are very many other ways in which our consciences can be tried, when we can be expected to do things that may be contrary to the law of God. And the lesson that we have from Daniel is that we must be prepared to stand up for God's way when those circumstances and challenges come to us. Of course, we read that at the end of the 10 days, verse 15, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. So Daniel proved the point, and God had been with him and strengthened him. And it's that strength of faith and character that we see through many of the events of the rest of Daniel's life. We see a man who was chosen by God, not just for the actions he carried out within the court of Babylon, but also to give each of us a message in our own day. And that message is one of hope and of comfort. And so Daniel looked forward to the coming of God's kingdom, just as we do now. Yet, dear brothers and sisters, it's so easy to say that, isn't it, that Daniel looked forward to the coming of God's kingdom. We have the whole of the scriptures to give us that strength of faith. But Daniel knew on what he had learnt from the scriptures available to him. So we learn later in chapter 1 that God was with these young men. Verse 17, as for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. He was able to reveal those secrets. Now at the end of the days, when the king had said that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king interviewed them among them all. None was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they served before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all of his realm. Yes, God was indeed with them. He gave them the strength, the abilities, the knowledge and understanding that they needed in their particular situation. And no doubt, this was a result of Daniel praying to God, and a reminder that if we go to God in prayer, then he will be there to help, guide, and strengthen us. We don't have that ability to use the Holy Spirit that perhaps Daniel did. But of course, that doesn't mean that God does not work through us by his Spirit under his own control. But Daniel was to be put to the test again. This time during the reign of King Darius, and recorded in chapter 6. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom, and over these 3 governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give account to them, so that the king would suffer no loss. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. Well, those words show us the great abilities that Daniel had. Note particularly that last verse, verse 3. what was being considered by the king was, in effect, to make Daniel the prime minister in the country. It's not surprising that the other satraps and governors objected to having this Jewish foreigner managing them. We can just imagine the furore in our own country if a foreigner was proposed as prime minister. And so these other leaders plot against Daniel. But nevertheless, the lesson, dear brethren and sisters, for us is that we must give of our best in the service to God, but also in our service to those who may have control over us in this life, be it at our place of work or to our leaders wherever they may be. Well, those that then tried to plot against Daniel had a problem. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom. But they could find no charge or fault because he, Daniel, was faithful. Nor was there any error or fault found in him. Then these men said, "We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God." Yes, they realized that Daniel in his daily existence would not make errors. He would not be found at fault. And so they tried to find some way where they could turn Daniel against the commands of God. Just before we go on to that, just think how wonderful it would be if those words could be spoken of us. "We shall not find any charge against any of those here tonight unless we find it against them concerning the law of God." That was the way that Daniel lived his life, as well as he possibly could. But of course, human nature is not quite like that. And so the governors and satraps still tried to find fault against Daniel, and they did so by trying to stop him from worshipping God. We may recall that they get Darius to make a decree that anyone who petitions any god or man other than Darius the king during a period of 30 years will be cast into the den of lions. And Darius makes the decree. And then we read that when Daniel knew that the decree had been signed, he went home, and in his upper room with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees 3 times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. No, the decree brought about by those who sought to undermine Daniel was not going to stop him. His responsibility, as it had been from his early days, was to serve and worship God, just as it is our responsibility today. He wasn't going to be stopped by the words of a mere man, whether he be king or not. And so, as his regular custom was, Daniel goes to his home, to his room, and he prays to God against the decree that had been issued. Again, his conscience was being tested, and Daniel rose to that challenge that had been made against him, and he then had to face the inevitable punishment that was the other part of that decree. So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But note these words. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. Then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signets of his lords, that the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. So we see the impact that Daniel's faith and his actions had had on King Darius. Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. Yes, Daniel's actions showed where his heart was, and the king recognized that. He saw Daniel exercising his faith through his worship and his prayer. But he couldn't lose face by negating the decree that he'd been tricked into making. And so here was Daniel, thrown in with the lions. But the outcome of the events wasn't quite what the conspirators expected. When the king went to the lion's den the next day, he found that Daniel was there unharmed. The king was exceedingly glad for him, verse 23, and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he believed in his God. And then we have the contrast. The king gave the command, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives. And the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den. Daniel had been there all night, but was unharmed. And yet these didn't even fall to the bottom of the den before the lions had attacked. And so we see how Daniel was fully justified in his knowledge of the power of God. That power to close the mouths of the lions and then to take retribution on those who opposed the will of God. Well, the title of our address, A Man Greatly Beloved, is taken from chapter 10 of Daniel. Verse 11, he said to me, O Daniel, man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak to you and stand upright, for I have now been sent to you. And that description, a man greatly beloved, sums up the faith of Daniel very well for each of us, surely. Because Daniel committed himself to God, his words, we're told, had been heard from the very beginning. Verse 12, do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come because of your words. Just by the time we reach this part of Daniel's life in the account, Daniel had shown himself a worthy servant of God. He'd faced challenges. He'd gained great respect from the rulers of the land. He'd stood before those rulers and the king, showing greater wisdom than the wise men of Babylon. He was a man in whom God could put his trust, and he became a beloved son of God. Well, as we consider the events of Daniel's life, we couldn't help but see a comparison between Daniel and his life and that of Joseph. They were both taken from their families into the court of a ruler and educated in a foreign land. They were both accused of crimes and imprisoned. And yet they both became very senior rulers, leaders, managers in their country. And they were respected by the rulers of those countries. Both had to face the jealousy of those around them because of the positions that they'd taken up. And both were able to interpret dreams better than the wise men of the country in which they now lived. And importantly, they were both faithful to God, despite the hardships and the trials that they faced. And they both recognized the promises of God. Well, there may be other similarities as well that come to your minds. Finally, we want to just look briefly at another reference that is made to Daniel in the prophecy of Ezekiel. We have it here, and there is a similar reference in verse 20 of the same chapter. Verse 14, well, the context is God is saying that when a land sins against me, verse 13, by persistent unfaithfulness, I will stretch out my hand against it. I will cut off its supply of bread, send famine on it, and cut off man and beast from it. In other words, God would seek his retribution against an unfaithful land. And he continues, even if these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job, were in it, they would deliver only themselves by their righteousness, says the Lord God. We have overtones there of Abraham's pleading for the faithful in Sodom. Now, some writers argue that the Daniel referred to in this passage is a quite different Daniel, of whom we know nothing else. Nevertheless, I think the mention of the righteousness of Daniel, which is so fitting as we've seen so far of the account of his life, makes it quite appropriate that it should be the same Daniel that is spoken of here. But also the context of the mention of his name alongside Noah and Job is also of interest. Job is generally reckoned to be a very early character in man's history on earth, as of course is Noah. Whereas Daniel comes at the very end of God's kingdom on earth at this time. And so perhaps they are three appropriate characters to come together. And if so, then this is a tribute to the righteousness of Daniel. Well, beyond this and the other parts of the book of Daniel, we know very little, except that we do have confirmation from Jesus that Daniel was indeed a prophet. I'm sure two very familiar verses from Matthew and Mark that say much the same thing. First one in Matthew speaks of Daniel the prophet, as does the one in Mark. So I think we can conclude with no better words than those of Daniel's own praise to God contained in the second chapter. Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank you and praise you, O God of my fathers. You have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we asked of you. For you have made known to us the king's demand." And in those words we see that faith, that righteousness, that understanding of Daniel, and his recognition of the one true God, the one God who is also our true God.